Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello, welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We are sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of One Day Fantasy Sports. I am your host, Neil Reynolds, back from my travels around America and very pleased to be joined by my good friend, Jeff Rimebold. Jeff, how are you, mate?
I'm good, brother. I'm good. You have put on some miles.
I did. I worked it out last week, Jeff. So eight teams, 8 days, 11 flights. It was 16,700 miles. It was more than I think 15 NFL teams will do during the regular season. So I've got a few observations. We'll get into those in due course, including news out of Miami, because I was there the day after Ryan Tannehill went down with his knee injury. Everything was up in the air when I was there, but they've since signed Jay Cutler. But Jeff, I want to talk with you about the business of the business. I know we've just, in case people think I'm being callous, we did check with you a couple of minutes ago off air and see if you wanted to talk about this, but it's always such a cutthroat business when you're a coach, and I don't know what term to use. I see on all the news stories it says you've been removed as defensive coordinator of the Hamilton Tiger Cats. First of all, how are you doing? And commiserations on that. Sorry, really sorry to hear it. And just maybe tell us how it played out.
Well, you know, it's part of the business. It's the business of the business, as you say. It's not the fun part of the business, certainly. But, you know, when you start a season the way we've started, 0-6, and, you know, we scored 5 touchdowns in 5 games. I mean, that's 1 touchdown a game for the first 5 games. You know, they're going to make changes. And when the head coach is an offensive guy, they're not going to make changes there. They have to be seen as trying. You know, I think that's the case now in every sport. It didn't used to be this way in pro football, but it's what it's come down to. And, you know, it's what we sign up for. We're big boys. We understand it's part of the business. It's interesting, Neil. They want me to stay and continue to work and they brought June Jones in to try and fix the offense, which, you know, he will. I have no question about that. He's such a great offensive mind. But, you know, that's a tough one. I'm kind of wavering on that. I'm going to meet with the president of the club this morning. We're going to talk about it. There's some things that would be, I'd have to have a specific way in order for that to happen. And then when you go through these things, you find out a tremendous amount about loyalty. And you wonder why guys don't take jobs unless they have only their guys in place with them. Mm. Well, it's for reasons like this. Because when it gets tough, and it's always going to get tough, the only thing you're ever guaranteed in pro football is adversity. When the adversity strikes, if the guys are bound together, you can weather it better than when guys are starting to feel like, oh my God, the ship's sinking, and I better see how I can keep, you know, on one of the lifeboats. So it's just part of the business, and hey, you go on, you learn from it, and here we go.
Jeff, you stop me whenever you don't want to talk about part of this, but I think I've got a couple of questions because I think all of what you're going through kind of relates to the NFL, and obviously our listeners, you know, will learn more about the coaching business if I ask you these questions and if you answer them. But if you don't want to answer them, I understand it's, you know, it's raw. It's raw. It's just literally happened last night. So, you tell me when you don't want to answer something and we'll move on without hesitation. But did you expect it? You mentioned there about the results. So did you start to get a sense? Because sometimes coaches, and we can kind of relate this all to the NFL as well. You know, Jeff Fisher, when he was on All or Nothing, he stood in front of the team and he said it was a shock. It was a shock. I mean, so he didn't, and the Rams weren't doing very well, and Jeff Fisher didn't expect it. Were you sort of going home at night sort of thinking I'm on kind of shaky ground?
No, not really. I mean, I think what you're so busy working that you tend to be oblivious to certain situations. Now, after the fact, you go back and you start to dig through the rubble and you see those little side conversations that are going on, you know, the subtle messages that you probably, if you weren't working at it so hard, would have picked up. Like I say, there are only very few of these jobs in the world. And so inside an organization, there are always guys that are trying to improve their situation or, you know, whatever. So, I mean, that's just the way it is. And it's sad, really, because the idea of a team sometimes doesn't go all the way through the team.
Right.
It kind of ends with the players. And so from that standpoint, you know, I it wasn't like, as a matter of fact, I was kind of shocked because we had played, you know, some of our best defense the night that we had lost the night before, but we had made three stops in the fourth quarter to give our offense the ball back with chances to win across, you know, across midfield. And, you know, we just couldn't get it done. The game ended with us trying to throw a ball into the end zone. If a guy catches it, we win the game. He drops it, and we don't win the game. And it's against an undefeated team. And so, you know, it's just the way it goes. It's interesting, Neil, you know, in my conversations with guys that I trust and guys that I know in the business that have been through a lot of stuff, you know, I had mentioned that they had said, well, you know, we'd like you to stay. And I wish I could give you the exact message that I got from Rob Ryan, but it was colorful to say the least. And he said, Jeff, no way. He said that when he left the Saints, he was actually, and I didn't know this. He said Sean Payton had called him in and said, Rob, I'm going to take away your play calling responsibility. And Rob said, no, you're not. I'm the defensive coordinator. And Sean said, well, I am because I'm the head coach. And let me just say this. When I was the offensive coordinator for the Giants, and this must have been during Fossil tenure, he said that Fossil took my play calling and duties away from me, and we went to the Super Bowl. And I said, I won't use the language.
No.
No. He said, no, I've been calling plays in the NFL since you were in high school. So, and I talked to Mark Trestman last night, who was the head coach of the Bears and got fired and then got very much the same situation last year in Baltimore.
Yeah.
When he was the offensive coordinator. And he said, no way. He said, you can't. Both of them advised me not to stay. He said, it'll be too raw. It'll be too, as much as you love the players and your loyalty to June, it just is not. He said, go surfing, go do your job at Sky and, you know, get some time and you know, kind of reassess where you are and what you want to do. So that's kind of been the message from everybody. Jerry Glanville said the same thing. He said, I couldn't do it.
Tough to go back in a different circumstance, right?
Yeah, even June said, you know, I want you to stay, but I couldn't do it. So,
no.
You know, I think that's probably the way it's going to sort out. Yeah. I've got to meet the president of the club this morning, and we're going to talk about some things. But, you know, it's been a wonderful 5 years here. It's been a great ride. It's been a lot of fun. The owner here is a fabulous owner. Scott Mitchell, our president, is a football guy, and so all of that stuff has made it an amazing place. The fans here are absolutely incredible. You know, we've sold out our stadium, I guess, 32 straight games since it's opened, and you know, so you move on and you know, it opens new opportunities, and you know, God, I always heard those London games were fun to be around.
So. There you go, Jeff. Well, let me just read you this, and I've got one more question. So, where's this tweet that came in today? I've got a lot of tweets that have come in and questions. There was one. It was basically saying, "Oh, here we go," from Danny Mulholland, who says, I just want to say that Ticat's loss will be our gain in regards to Jeff. Every cloud has a silver lining and all that. So, Jeff, I do think there's going to be a silver lining for you. For us in the UK, you know, no one wants you to go through what you've had to go through. I'm not going to ask you details because you're going to still meet with the president, but you mentioned trust there and how... you know, you've got to know who you're kind of in the same boat with. And, You said that about John Fossil and Jeff Fisher when we watched the All or Nothing stuff. So I get the impression that there's kind of like you feel like there's not everyone on that same page within that organization. You don't have to say, but that's just
I'm not gonna
no, mention, of course.
But you know, here's what.
But it happens, right?
Yeah. This is the reality of the business. You have guys with agendas, and you know, it's very, very, very rare, and I mean very rare, for everybody to be, you know, focused on one goal. One of the reasons why you look at a team like the Patriots and why they have done as well as they have done, almost exclusively, they raised their own. You know, what I mean is, those guys, Matt Patricia, you know, all of those guys, with very, very few exceptions, have come up through the ranks in their building. And so the culture and what, you know, what the Patriot way, even that extends to the coaches. And that's why, that's another one of the reasons why they're so consistent and so they're so successful. Josh McDaniel started as the lowest guy on the totem pole and has risen to offensive coordinator and then head coach and then came back after his tenure in Denver didn't go the way he wanted it to. And Belichick welcomed him back with open arms because he knew he could trust him. He knew that what Josh's strengths were, his weaknesses, because we've all got them. And he also understood the way things are done in New England. So if, when you look at that staff, that is a model for, you know, everybody on the same page, everybody pulling in the right direction. There are other staffs, however, where it's, because these jobs are so coveted and they pay so much that it's just natural that people are going to try and climb over one another and do whatever it takes. And it, and sometimes, you know, it can be really, really subtle. It can be as little as, you know, a side conversation that you have. And Coach Vermeil used to say all the time about how important it was for the staff to be united. And at any time, when somebody starts a conversation about, well, I would be doing it this way, or you should be doing it this way, or they're not using you, you know, with a player, they're not using you in the right way, I would use you this way. All of that stuff is divisive, and it is not productive for the team. And, you know, that, like disloyalty comes in a lot of fashion. Like I say, it can be not doing something the way it needs to get done continuously. Well, that's basically the same thing as saying, hey, listen, I'm not going to do it your way. I'm not going to do it the way we, you know. And then there's also the obviously the more blatant form of disloyalty, which is, you know, guys cutting side room deals and, you know, that. And so you live through those experiences. If you win enough, and they're always going on, if you win enough, you can mask that. But when you're not winning, then somebody has to pay the price. And that's, you know, it works. It's just the business of the business.
One last question, Jeff, because I know you want to talk NFL and you want to get into training camps and preseason. But this, again, is, I think, interesting stuff for our listeners to understand what happens in professional football. And it's NFL, CFL, it's the same deal. The coaches, do you have any chance to argue your corner? Is it when you've got the call and you go into the office, is it a done deal? I mean, so with Jeff Fisher, would it have been a done deal? For you, was it a done deal? Was then, do you have any kind of discussion, or is it just you are given the information that you are being removed?
Well, I think, you know, I think every situation is unique. The thing that was, took me by surprise was that there was no, you know, there were no conversations previous. There was no, you know, the head coach calls you in and says, guys, what are you doing on third down, or what are you doing in this situation? You know, I don't like what you're doing here. You're blitzing too much. You're not blitzing enough. Any of those conversations, there was none of that. It was just kind of a blindsided, I got a text at 5:30 in the morning to meet the head coach at 9. I walked in and he told me what he was doing, and that was the end of it. And then you go out, and the first phone call you make is obviously to your agent, because you want to make sure that, you know, you're protected financially. And what's interesting is a lot of contracts today, and I have a very, very very good agent, a guy named Paul Sheehy out of Denver, does a number of NFL guys. A lot of contracts today are written with what's called a reassignment clause in it, so that they can they could reassign you anywhere inside the organization. You could go to be a scout. You could, you know, they could do any of that. Lucky, like I said, that Paul is an extremely sharp guy and made sure that in my contract there was no such reassignment clause. And so, you know, they are responsible for, you know, paying you through the duration of your contract. Mm.
All right, Jeff, let's move on and talk some NFL football, which we'll be doing throughout the season, and we'll be getting you over to Sky Sports soon enough to talk about it. So I went to these 8 training camps, and then we can talk about a bit of news off the back. But should I just give you a couple of observations that I saw, and then we can chat about those?
Yeah, I've been waiting all week to hear your impressions of, you know, where you were and the differences in the team, the approach in training camp, and, you know, who you thought really was, you know, was really impressive and who was not so impressive.
Well, I'll just give you a couple of overviews and a couple of things which I think are quite interesting. And it's not all of the, this guy made a catch or this guy made a nice throw, but I saw very physical practices, Jeff. So Arizona, I was
really?
There. Yeah, Arizona, I was there on a day they scrimmaged. So that was very physical. They were tackling to the ground. It was full-on proper hitting. So there were a couple of times where the running back, David Johnson, went through the hole and he kind of got tackled by a couple of linebackers and he was held up and the safety came in and just lit him up. I mean, it was good to see proper football being played. And Bruce Arians had talked before about rolling the dice, and I met with Bruce and we sat down and talked, and he did kind of go through that whole thing again, that tackling is a dying art in the NFL, and he wants his team to tackle. And I was just going to talk about the Cardinals a little bit generally and get your thoughts on it, because there was lots of wringing of the hands. You know, they've lost Calais Campbell, they lost Tony Jefferson, but I saw Tyrann Mathieu, Jeff, and he was, one minute he was blitzing off the edge from 5 yards deep. The next minute he's playing center fielder from 30 yards deep. They've still got Chandler Jones. They've got Marcus Golden coming off the other end. Robert Kemdichie was in the backfield a couple of times. You've got Patrick Peterson. I think the Cardinals are going to be just fine. What do you think?
Well, everything that I've heard, and this is one of the things I wanted to confirm with you, was Kemdichie has had a real good camp.
Yes.
And he's shown signs and flashes of being the guy that they drafted and have grown a great deal over this year, not only physically, but from a maturation standpoint, become more of a pro. You know, the guy that nobody ever talks about in that defense, and he's actually an English-born kid, is Josh Morrow, the big defensive end. You know, in that 3-4, you've got to have those guys inside that eat blocks and you know, do a great job of playing the 4-eye, which is not an easy position to play. And, you know, he, like I said, I think he lived in England until he was 7. Mm. He's one of ours. And again, he's one of those, if you're going to play that style of defense, you know, which is what, you know, I believe in, you got to have both the flexibility of the Tyrann Mathieu that can both cover and blitz, and those linebackers who can run, but you got to find those big guys inside who will, you know, are unselfish and will eat up blocks. And, you know, I think that Cardinals defense will bounce back. And I think one of the reasons they're having such a physical camp is not only the tackling aspect, but they did not play well early in the year defensively. And I think Bruce is trying to set the tone a little bit, you know, going into the season.
A couple of other things, Jeff. When I was in New Orleans, again, there was a very old school feel to some of these practices. So you think about Arians wanted the Cardinals to get physical. Sean Payton is kind of old school. John Harbaugh the same way. And Jacksonville, the players in Jacksonville said toughest training camp practices they've ever been a part of. But in New Orleans, it was interesting because second play in team drills, I saw Adrian Peterson get knocked to the ground. And Adrian Peterson, whenever he was in Minnesota, always wore the red jersey like a quarterback. And that wasn't the case in New Orleans. So they were very physical. They were tackling to the ground as well. In Baltimore, I was talking to the PR guys and they were saying about how John Harbaugh runs the longest, toughest practices in the NFL. And that this has been going on from the days of Ray Lewis. And basically, if you're allowed a 3-hour practice in the CBA, then John Harbaugh will run a 2 hours, 59 minutes and 59 second practice. He pushes his team hard. And the other thing from Baltimore was that Joe Flacco was very, very laid back about his injury. And I don't think he has any concerns about coming back. But there's another example, Jeff, and we could talk about New Orleans and Baltimore. You know, there was, you know, I've come back from these training camp trips in previous years and have been like, there's not been a tackle made in anger. Here I am seeing Adrian Peterson knocked to the ground and Baltimore kind of running their players into the ground.
Yeah, it's different philosophies. And you talk about all of those guys that you mentioned, they're all what you consider, quote, old school guys. Mm. And, you know, look where they come from. Sean Payton's family tree, if you will, his family coaching tree, is the Parcells tree. And that's physical, hard nose, you know, tough practices. You know, Harbaugh, same dose. I mean, he grew up coach's son. His dad was a coach for Bo Schembechler at Michigan, who was one of the toughest and most physical, demanding guys in college football for years. So that's kind of what they know. That's how they know to do it. And I think there's, you know, a kind of a, I don't know if it, a revolution's too strong to say, Neil, but it's, there's certainly a move back inside pro football to making training camp more physical, even though you know that there's a risk involved, because it's just so important that you come in and play well early in the season now. And again, that's a product of a lot of the things we've talked about today. Coaches are under more pressure, more, there's more scrutiny, there's more, you know, you're always, you know, it's a very, 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 what have you done for me lately business. And, you know, you gotta get out of the gate well, or, you know, there's repercussions, as we say.
A couple more behind the scenes things, Jeff, and then we'll get on to talking about Jay Cutler. So, in Jacksonville, in years gone past, we've always done our interviews in one of the visiting team locker rooms, which is opposite the Jags player locker room. And then when we finished our interviews, we kind of wander out to practice. And you could be wandering along the corridor to go out to practice, and let's say Blake Bortles will just walk past you, or Paul Posluszny will walk past you, and you're kind of walking alongside the players going out to the practice field. This year, that corridor is off limits. Tom Coughlin has locked the place down, and there are a bunch more details with the media, where there's a lot more limitations. I just thought it was amusing because they were telling me a story. When Coughlin was first in Jacksonville, the year back in when they first started up, they had the media in like a kind of 10-foot by 10-foot square, a painted square on the field. Then there was a practice field and then another practice field, and Coughlin would always have his team on the furthest practice field, and the sun shone back into the eyes of the media. So it's not quite like that now, but certain corridors and certain places are out of bounds. You won't be surprised to hear, right?
No. He really makes you feel welcome, doesn't he?
And I had an interview. You know, I had an interview scheduled with him, and he pulled out.
Now, this is the same guy who, when he was at Jacksonville, did not allow the coaches to wear sunglasses. Now, you know what it's like, the sun in Jacksonville, mm-hmm. during training camp. Didn't allow the coaches to wear sunglasses during practice because he wanted to make sure that players could see, when they looked into the players' eyes, they could see the coaches' eyes. The same guy who fined a player for being late for a meeting because he got in an automobile accident. And, you know, I mean, that's just Tom. That's the way he does things. And I think that's a shot of, that's an injection into that franchise that maybe they needed a little bit, because, you know, it had not been that way under Gus. Gus had made it such a welcoming place, an open place, and which was great for the media and it was great for us. But, you know, I think there is a time and a place, and I think when Tom looked at the organization, he felt like he needed to tighten the ship up a little bit. And mm-hmm. you know, Doug is the same way, and so you know, that's the way now in Jacksonville. How did the players seem to be responding to that?
So Allen Robinson said, "I'm upset they took our table tennis table away from the locker room." AJ Bue said, "Toughest practices he's ever been a part of," and then he said it just took a little bit of getting used to. So he said, "If you're on time in Jacksonville, you're late." He said, "So now we don't even get there like 6 minutes early, which is Coughlin time." He said, "Everyone's in the meeting rooms 10 minutes early because they just fear, you know, having the iron fist of Tom Coughlin slammed down on them." Coughlin walks around the field, Jeff, like he's a coach. But him and Doug Marone are like the same guy. I sat and interviewed Doug Marone and I thought I was interviewing Tom Coughlin. So you're right on that one. But I think the players have kind of struggled with it a little bit. They were certainly physically exhausted, but they just want to win. So I think they, for now, they're kind of buying in. But of course, if the results don't go that way, then that stuff's not quite so much fun, is it?
No, and you're exactly right. I think the thing that'll be interesting to see is, can they win early? And if they win early, watch out, because we've talked about the talent level at Jacksonville, and I think that, you know, once this discipline and toughness gets embedded in that football team, if they can win some games early, they can make a run. And now, I'm not talking about a Super Bowl run, but they can certainly make a run in their own division. But if it doesn't work that way, then it can go completely the opposite way too. So there's some risk involved in all of it. Obviously, players will do about anything if it means they can win, right? And but on the other hand, if they're not winning, it's really, really tough, because you know it's a win business. That's what it is.
One last one, Jeff. So I was in Baltimore and I'm sitting around in reception waiting to record a link just to finish off the little piece we're doing there. This is just behind the scenes, but it gives you an indication of maybe a little bit of the landscape in America at the moment. The phone was ringing off the hook, just nonstop. And the poor receptionist was like, quiet for 10 seconds. Then she's like, please don't call her again. And then the phone rings again and she waits and they're saying stuff and yelling. And she goes, please don't call her again. Non-stop for about 10 minutes. Then she gets up. She's like, I've got to take a break from all this Kaepernick stuff. Goes to get some lunch. Comes back. The phone's still ringing off the hook. I get down to Miami the day Ryan Tannehill went down injured. They were inundated with phone calls from the season ticket holders, basically saying, "Do not sign Colin Kaepernick." It was just a little snapshot, Jeff, but it's an indication of kind of what an NFL owner has to take into consideration now. Outside of just the football stuff, and you know, Steve Bisciotti kind of asked for it. He asked for fan feedback. Well, he was getting it with the phone ringing off the hook.
Well, I think that's again, that's the reality of that situation, and to think that Colin Kaepernick is not one of the 300 best quarterbacks and walking on this planet is crazy. Mm. But you know, the reality of it is when you take on that guy, you take on that image, you take on that, you know, all of that stuff that comes with it. And, you know, every owner has to weigh the pros and cons of doing that. And if in his mind the cons outweigh the pros, then, you know, obviously he's not going to pull the trigger on a deal like that. But certainly at this point, I thought with the injuries, the lack of backup in Baltimore, mm-hmm. the injuries in Miami, all the situations around the league, you would think for sure that Colin would have a job. However, you know, again, he's still out there on the street looking for work.
Yeah, Jeff, Ryan Mallett was awful. He couldn't hit a cow's backside with a banjo when he was at practice. It was terrible. And you think, well, why? You obviously, all that other stuff matters, because there would be no reason not to sign him. And you can't say, well, they're not from the same system. He's not the same as Joe Flacco, because Derek Anderson is not the same as Cam Newton, but he still backs him up. So, you know, it didn't make sense, but that's probably why.
You know, the Baltimore one was where I thought he would end up because of the Harbaugh. And, you know, Jim and John are so close, and Jim haven't had him and you know, as his quarterback to the Super Bowl, and I know he has allegiance to the kid. I would have thought that if there was a chance for Colin, it was going to happen in Baltimore because of the Harbaugh connection. But, you know, again, like you said, Mr. Bisciotti has to make that call at the end of the day.
So when I went to Miami, it was the day after Ryan Tannehill went down. As I said, they were still up in the air on the quarterback. In fact, as we record this now, Tannehill's immediate future is still up in the air. No more news on his knee and how much time he's going to need or whether he needs surgery. But clearly the Dolphins are moving on for this season. And they've re-signed or signed and tempted out of retirement Jay Cutler. So it's a $10 million deal. It can go up to $13 million in bonuses. So Cutler's... I've never been the biggest fan, Jeff. I won't lie to you, but... don't laugh. Somebody said to me last week on Twitter, they said, so who do you want, Cutler or Kaepernick? And I thought, it's almost like imagine I've got this beautiful cow. Imagine I've got this beautiful cow that I love. And it's like saying, do you want McDonald's or Burger King to look after your cow? But they've got him on the cheap, really, Jeff, because only in terms of veteran quarterbacks who aren't tied into rookie deals, the only ones being paid less are Josh McCown and Brian Hoyer. There are 22 veteran quarterbacks who will earn more than Cutler in 2017. So the one good thing you can say here is that Miami didn't have to do what Minnesota did a year ago and overpay. What are your thoughts on Jay Cutler to the Dolphins?
Well, you know, I mean, it's probably the best thing they could do at this point with Tannehill's in an uncertainty and going forward. And you've got a head coach who's worked with the guy. He'll be familiar with, you know, the terminology in the playbook. He'll be much more up to speed, much quicker, you know, because of his time with Adam Gase in the past. You cannot deny the fact that Jay Cutler does have one of the top arms in the NFL. You also cannot deny the fact that he's underachieved at every place he's been. But again, you're talking about a guy that is a veteran that's been there, done that. And, you know, when you start weighing the alternatives, there aren't very many. And I think it's a good signing, frankly, for the Dolphins for where they're at. I mean, I really look forward to having you have an opportunity to spend a little time around him when he comes to London. Mm. I know you guys are close. Probably go out.
That's going to be a good interview, isn't it?
So what? I tell you what. Our fans are the greatest because somebody tweets to me. One of the listeners tweets to me. I think we need to put Neil Reynolds on high building alert and make sure he has no ropes around him.
My only concern, Jeff, is, now I've said this before, at some point you kind of are what you are, and Jay Cutler has been strong-armed, but kind of loose cannon, turnovers. But, you know, there is a little bit of hope there because of what Adam Gase managed to get out of him. But, you know, again, you worry about that sort of, is he a front-runner, is he a bad leader? But Gase is having none of that. Gase says that, you know, he tried to coach the body language stuff out of Cutler when they were in Chicago. And he seems to think, you know, he strongly defends Cutler and likes what he sees. And, yeah, I, the only thing, I'm kind of all in on Adam Gase. I met him, I interviewed him. What an impressive guy he was. And he talked about how he comes from that kind of Belichick, Patriots tree, kind of loosely connected. He coached with Nick Saban, who was obviously with Belichick a lot. He coached for Josh McDaniels, who coached with Belichick. So he said he's after the same kind of players, smart players, players who love football. So I do trust Adam Gase, but you've not always kind of been wowed by Cutler's leadership skills. But again, we don't really know what they are, do we? That's just what we see on the camera, and he certainly has body language issues.
Well, I think Jay's number one body language, as you say, and the other thing, his kind of snarky attitude really worked against him. I go back to the time when, you know, he hurt his knee in Chicago and, you know, got criticized for not playing, and, you know, and how he has handled those things has been typical Jay. It's just like, well, you know, he doesn't really care and what you think or how you think or what the media says, and I've heard mixed things about him with his teammates. Some of his teammates absolutely love him, and And there are others who, you know, don't have much to say about him. That's very good. So he kind of is, he's one of those guys that certainly for the Dolphins, he's a guy that can make the throws that you need to win games. He's a guy that the head coach has a relationship. He's a veteran. Again, if you're going into a season where you're trying to take a step and become, you know, a playoff team or, you know, trying to unseat the Patriots in the East, you got to have the best possible guys available to you. And right now, looking at what's available, Jay Cutler's the best choice in my mind that the Dolphins could make.
Question out of the mailbag I'll take now, Jeff, comes from Roger Grace, who says, which Jay is the most important for the Dolphins this season? So Jay Cutler or Jay Ajayi?
Well, I think Jay Ajayi, number one, because he's going to be the foundation of that running game, and everything in Miami functions off of the running game. You know, the thing I'm always worried about with Jay Ajayi is he runs so angry. Mm-hmm. I mean, he runs so physical and so tough, and he's not a very big guy. It's just his ability to take that pounding that a running back in that offense has to take over 16 weeks. If he can stay healthy, obviously that will help Cutler because you're not going to put all of it on his shoulders. Mm. Now, if they lose Jay or if he's, you know, again, whatever, then I think too much pressure will go to Cutler and too much. I mean, we've seen that in Chicago. When he functions best, when he had that real good year with Trustman, there was balance in that offense. You had Matt Forte had a 1,000-yard season. Forte was outstanding out of the backfield, and then, you know, he got plays from Brandon Marshall and you know, they have big outside receivers that could make plays, and Martellus Bennett at tight end. So, you know, that was a very talented offense, and Jay had weapons at his disposal. Now, again, I think he's in a situation in Miami that's very similar, that he's got weapons outside, that he's got a tailback that he can turn and hand it to, you know, 20 times a game and you know, pound away and you know, get the 8-man box looks where he knows he's got single outside. All that stuff is going to be an advantage to Jay.
Jay Ajayi was actually in the concussion protocol when we were there, so that's again lends itself to what you're saying about dealing with that pounding. He was missing time in training camp when we were there. Jeff, just a couple of other things I noticed. Maybe you can talk us through the reasoning for this, but the timing of it. Vince Wilfork has called time on his great career. Rob Ninkovich has retired from the Patriots. Brandon Albert retired, but now wants to unretire. And I would imagine if he did, the Jags would release him because they've got Cam Robinson playing at left tackle now and won't want to pay $8.5 million to Brandon Albert. And Brandon Flowers is looking at retiring from the NFL. Why right on the eve of the new season, and why not at the end of last season?
Well, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. In everybody's case, it's, you know, reassessing. Let me just paint it this way for the fans. When you get to be a Rob Ninkovich and a Vince Wilfork and Brandon Albert, guys that have, you know, made a lot of money and had great careers, the off season is the toughest part. It's the willingness, the fire to get up and every day go do the work. Mm-hmm. And I think what happens is, you know, they go through the OTAs, they go through the mini camps, and then they get to the summer and they look at this and say, oh God, 8 weeks of training camp, 16 weeks of the season. Do I really, really have that fire in me anymore?
Yeah.
And I think, particularly in Vince's case, you know, that's a tough deal. And you know, I thought his retirement. And I'm trading in my cleats for smoked meat immediately, hawking some barbecue thing. I don't know what, but you know,
hung up his dungarees.
He kind of went out in a way, in the only, you know, Vince kind of way. Ninkovich was one that, for me, kind of hurt a little bit because, you know, I've always been such a big fan of his. His guy's been cut three times and really didn't do anything particularly well. Didn't, you know, wasn't an elite pass rusher, didn't have elite skills, but in that system in New England was so critical to their success because he could do so many things, and he was such a great team guy. And it was really poignant to see the things that Julian Edelman, who, you know, was an offensive player, said about him when he retired. And, you know, it's a people have to understand this is an incredibly demanding business, you know, not only physically, you know, the wear and tear it takes on your body, but emotionally because of the pressure that's there all the time. And, you know, from a time standpoint, these guys, you know, once the season kicks in, once they go to training camp, I mean, in most cases, you don't see your family for 8 weeks, and then, you know, then the season starts, and, you know, you're married to football. You're not married to, you may be married to a woman, but you may have a family, but your real family is football. That's just the way it is. It's the nature of the business. So it's a grind. It is a mental grind. It's an emotional grind, and it's a physical grind. And at some point, I think they all say, you know, it's just not worth it anymore.
Jeff, I spoke to all 8 coaches that are bringing their teams to London this year, and with the exception of Bruce Arians, every single one of them said that they handle the whole work-life balance thing horribly. And it goes to what you're saying, you know, once you're in, you're kind of all in. And it was interesting, a couple of them, it was, you know, their wives kind of know it because their wives grew up in football families. I thought it was interesting that some of the coaches had actually married wives who were in football families, but again, it's stuff we talked about quite a lot on this podcast, but Bruce Arians was the one who was like, when we try and get our work done and then we get home, whereas Sean Payton was saying, we've installed bunk beds in the offices for the coaches. Adam Gase was really interesting. He said, I handle it horribly, but he said, I never sleep in the office. He said, it's too depressing. So I go to the hotel that's attached to the complex. He said, I don't drive home at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. He said, I can't sleep in my office. It's too depressing. But he said, I do handle it really horribly. So it's, again, you talk about grind, and you know, we've always talked about coaches getting worn out. They kind of wear themselves out.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, a lot of the guys in this business, as a matter of fact, most guys in this business are either paying child support or spousal support. That's just the way it is. I mean, it is hard. It is hard. I make a joke about it.
Sure.
But it's hard on families. You know, and that's what makes the Arians' relationship with his wife really, to me, so unique and kind of throwback, because Coach Vermeil and Carol, you know, Dick and Carol Vermeil had the same kind of, you know, partnership. And, you know, it's a really rare woman that can understand that can really, you know, in a lot of ways, Neil, I mean, this is just the fact. They have to put themselves second. And, that's not a very comfortable place for a lot of partners to be. And because once the season starts, and even now with the off seasons the way they are, you know, you're really, there is no balance. There is no work-life balance.
No.
And, you know, in Bruce's case, I think he's got the age and the chops to say, hey, listen, guys, get out of here. Go home, spend time with your family, do it. But it's not that way very often. And again, you look around at the NFL head coaches, you look around certainly at the vast majority of NFL assistant coaches, and, you know, they've been down the road, you know, in terms of, you know, their family lives, and it's very, very difficult on families. Hard to raise kids. The mother really is the father and, you know, all of it in the house most of the time, because dad's gone and he's involved and he's in his job, it's the nature of the business. And I think there's a number of cases that you can point to. Tragically, Andy Reid, you know, lost a son, you know, again,
Tony
how much
Dungy
of that
as
you
well, Jeff.
Yeah, Tony Dungy. How much of that you can attribute to the grind and the pressure and the lack of being home? I'm not a psychologist, but I know it's got to be some.
Yeah, there was a few like that. Tony Dungy, Joe Philbin. Lost his son as well, so yeah, certainly wonder how it plays in. A couple of other bits of news. Go on.
This business, this job, this career, this, whether it's player or coach or whatever, it comes at a tremendous cost. There is a lot of your life that you don't have. You know, I thought about that the other day. You know, you're only given so many summers in this life, and I think fans have to understand just how much these guys actually give up to do this work, to be in this business, and it's a very, very, very unbalanced life.
Mm. Certainly one that takes it out of you. Let's just look a couple of bits of news. Jets lost Quincy Anunua, the wide receiver for the season. The injury bug has hit the Chargers again, Jeff. Mike Williams, their rookie wide receiver, struggling with a back injury, and they lose rookie guard Forrest Lamp to a torn ACL. Again, we said this before, you've got to start wondering what the Chargers are doing. I mean, sometimes it's just bad luck, but you know, I'm sure that a torn ACL you can't do a lot about, but this is just a team that year after year after year just gets struck with injuries.
Yeah, I mean, you go through, we went through the same thing here, right? You know, let me just give you our first 6 weeks. Never put the same 12 guys on defense on the field, ever, not one time. We started 9 different rookies and 7 every game. Well, why is that? It's not because we wanted to play that many rookies. It's just because of the injury thing. It's the reality. It hits you. It's tough. It's unfair. But, you know, we've gone through 4 years of analytics to find out, you know, are we running them too much? Do they hydrate enough? You know, you try and do everything the right way, and I'm sure the Chargers are doing the same thing. But it's just that unknown, that roll of the dice that you know, okay, is the roulette wheel going to, you know, hit on black 7, or is it going to hit on, you know, just you never know. It's the unknown of the game.
Yeah, Drew Brees said to me, I asked Drew Brees, you know, in all the years you've been playing, does it ever get any easier? And he said, no, because there are variables all the time. You never know when somebody's going to miss a block, somebody's going to get hurt, and that's just pro football. Jeff, let's take one question out of the mailbag just to finish off. And it's one question that's the same question from three people, from Adrian Croft, Lewis Gamble, and Andrew Black. And it's quite a pressing question. They ask, is it all over for Ryan Tannehill in Miami?
Gosh, I would hope not. I mean, again, obviously, we don't know the extent of the injury. But I would, you know, my best guess, as a guy who's done this for a long time, with the ability that they have to rehab and do all those things, I would certainly say no. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be,
financially possibly, because they had he had a long-term deal, but after 2016, it became a sort of team-friendly series of those one-year deals. But do you really want to start over again?
No, I can't. You know, again, I just, you know, gosh. Everybody knows how hard it is to find quarterbacks,
right,
and particularly one that's shown flashes that he can be an elite level quarterback. So to think that I would be surprised, frankly, if that's the case. The only two things that in my mind that could make that happen would be that the knee is actually worse than we think it is.
Mm.
Obviously, that's the unknown. And then the other thing is that, you know, Cutler would come in and light it up, and all of a sudden, you know, because of his contract, he's a much cheaper value for him. But I think that's a reach, and I just don't, maybe at another position you might say that, but at that position, I think it's that it will be his job as long as he's healthy enough, you know, to do the job.
Mm. All right, we are out of time, Jeff. One last message on Twitter. It comes from Hugh King, who says, just pass on our regards to Jeff regarding the Tiger Cats change. Their loss, brackets, short-sighted, is most definitely our gain. I'm sure it will be our gain, Jeff, and we look forward to having you over soon. But lots of good wishes coming from our listeners and from your followers on Twitter.
You know, it's been really amazing. It's been humbling, actually. The reaction has been, you know, I actually got a little choked up about it last night because people have been so good. I appreciate all of that. And again, you know, like you say, I think this is an opportunity now to do what we've always wanted to do, which is the whole season together and you know, an off season and you know, make our just continue to grow our product and our game in the NFL.
Here,
in England.
Here. The double act is on. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. Until next week, you're still a coach. You'll always be a coach. Say goodbye, coach.
Aloha.